I am a salesperson through and through, but I also know my audience and our ideal client. We want to be absolutely sure the client knows how we work with our minimum spend, our flat fees, and the fact that we are not solving world hunger at the initial meeting, because we're not. We give them a lot to think about, and often they want to consult with a spouse, right? Okay, that makes sense. We make a closing statement, but it's low key. I am not selling life insurance here. And I want to come across as professional. I want to show gratitude that they called us. I want to be knowledgeable. I want to listen to their words to discern their true needs and pain points and illustrate our friendly nature.
Welcome to the Damn Good Designer Podcast. Join hosts Cheryl and Liz, the visionary and integrator balancing all the moving parts of a full-service interior design firm. Get ready for a wild ride as they challenge the norms, challenge the industry, and challenge you with damn good truths about what success looks like today. Now your hosts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Damn Good Designer Podcast. We are super happy you are here today. And Liz is here with me too. And we are ready to dig into a great conversation about leads. We all want them, right? We love them. We sometimes don't love them, but we all need them to continue our business. And the question is, how do you determine the ones that are right for you and the ones that are not a great fit? I know that everybody sort of thinks that they probably have this answer pretty well, but I don't know that, well, you might just want to listen to what we have to say. Let's just talk about that way. Okay, Liz does this every day for us. And listen, thank God for that, because I get so excited about the potential puzzle to solve when someone calls. We would take on way more leads than we have the capacity to handle, right, Liz?
She'd be designing, you know, before we even go out for the consult meeting if I let her.
Probably. Okay, well, I have kind of come back sometimes before we've done the scope and sketched out a few things and that sort of thing. And I get in trouble for that. We get a lot of leads, honestly, and we're grateful for every one of them. This is part of my problem. I am honestly and truly, truly delighted when people call us and want our help. It hasn't gotten old for me. I mean, it's just no lie. I can say that these calls are just, they're the lifeblood, I think, of our you know, company, and I really enjoy it. But the bad part about that is we cannot take on every job of every size and every type, and neither can you. There has to be guidelines on how we determine or how you determine what will work for your setup and your bandwidth and your resource capacity. And I think Liz will agree with me on that, because I get into trouble for it all the time. Right, Liz?
Indeed.
Yeah, yep. Okay, so let's dig into it now. Okay, with every lead that comes in, whether it's by phone, by email, or people sometimes dropping by the shop, not so often with that, but there's, you know, sometimes that happens. There's some preliminary qualifying, of course, that you have to do as we start to hear the questions and details and things like that they ask. You know, we start considering what they anticipate their needs are for the scope. That's obviously the key element, right? You know, and then of course, where the house is and what exactly they feel they need the most help with. I will say that when they first call in, or, you know, sometimes Liz might call back directly from a web form lead, but typically it's coming through our shop first. And part of the process with that is that they are going to get the address then, and then they're going to Zillow it so that we kind of have an idea of what we're looking at or talking about when we talk to people, of course. But there's points, these are the points we're going to want to elaborate on when we speak with them, because this is what helps us define how robust our services need to be, and really how much impact we can make in the way of design services, right? And there's no formula to this. And I want to pause here for a little PSA, and there is no script either. Okay, so please do not fall for this clickbait, let me give you a script crap that coaches all over the place do, and consultants and whomever. I don't know. I mean, I think that everyone seems to do it. It's not just in our industry, but there is no script with it. A good discovery call, you know, has to be a little fluid, and it helps us navigate through questions that actually shed light on what the client's expectations are and what they're prepared to invest, and then how they imagine our services actually work. It's just so fluid that really having a script is not a good idea. It really isn't, because I think you're going to miss out on some nuance, right? A little bit of nuance. Absolutely. When a client is talking that you might not if you are following any kind of script. And of course, I'm sure that people aren't just reading things verbatim. I know that. But still, I think that you can have a checklist of things that you might want to impart, We do. Mm-hmm. And a checklist of things you want to gain from the call, we do. But having an actual script, I think, is not, you know, a good idea. And also, before we get into Liz talking about this more, it's important to note you should be letting the prospect talk way before you dig in on what you have to say or start explaining what you do. This is probably, I think, the biggest mistake I see people making. And it's easy to do, honestly, because they're going to ask, right? I mean, that is something that someone is going to start the conversation with. And your natural response and process is to answer the questions, right? So it's perfectly understandable. But it's really key to not do this and instead ask them questions about their project. So Liz, tell us how you handle that part of it.
Yeah, I think this is like a really, just like you said, this is a very key aspect to having a really productive discovery call, because you want to not only be able to listen to what it is that they're saying and then decide what it is that you need to say in response to either address pain points that they've mentioned or to sort of help get them a good general sense of how you work maybe a little differently than they expect. But also, you want to start to lay that groundwork for a really great interpersonal communication with this person, because that's part of how you're going to endear them to who you are and your business and how it is that you operate. So there's a couple of sort of tactics when it comes to that, but it's a lot easier to be able to position what you need to say after you've got enough information to really determine what it is that this person needs to hear. Yeah. So that's why it's so important to us to structure it that way.
Right, right. I think it's like you show me your cards before I show you mine kind of thing, right?
Exactly.
Something like that. And of course, it's an easy one when someone calls up and says, hey, I'm building a house, I need plans and furnishings and just need someone to handle it. Ding, ding, ding. You know, obviously, this seems like a great fit for a larger full service firm like ours, right? Or maybe they call and say, hey, I'm an investor and I just bought this house in East Hill and it needs a full gut and remodel so I can get it on the market to rent next year. I mean, we do jobs like that all the time. The bells are going to go off. These are great first words to hear from a prospect, for sure. Now, that doesn't preclude us from still having our A game on during the discovery call, mind you. But the potential for a fit feels more obvious right off the bat. It's just a more obvious, great fit for us. And these are the type of clients that we're aiming to target most of the time. But, of course, those leads come in probably one in every 10 or so, because we get leads every day. Literally, we get leads every day. And they're not all the best leads for the size of our firm or where we are right now in our evolution of a firm or where we are with the workload we have and you know, our bandwidth and the managing our resources. We manage our resources really tightly. We are, you know, trying to maximize our capacity all the time, but we also, to do that, to maximize your capacity, you also have to manage your resources really good. So I won't get into that because that's, again, another whole nother podcast. But the more common requests are for smaller or more focused scopes of work. Clients who are not sure where to start, but know that they need help and are on a strict budget. They need someone to help pull it all together. Or they think they need help with paint colors and materials, and maybe don't realize how much goes into a more substantial remodel. And during this discovery call, this is our opportunity to really make them understand that. And I think Liz does a great job with that, Liz. So kudos to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a balance every single time that you speak with someone, because you never really know. And even sometimes the inquiry that comes in, they may say something off the cuff or use certain words that kind of lead us to think one thing. And then when you start talking to them, you realize, well, actually, this person is asking for something totally different. So it's important to really identify where the intention needs to be about that conversation. So, you know, what sort of relationship are they going to want to see in this collaboration with you? How is it that they anticipate a designer is going to be involved? Because sometimes they have maybe other experience working with other designers, or they might have seen something on, heaven forbid, HGTV that you need to kind of put the kibosh on. You know, what are their expectations of your services? This is another thing. You know, people think maybe that things can be more piecemeal, or perhaps they really do want something where you're all in and taking care of everything. You know, what do they expect is a reasonable investment? This is another huge question and really an important one to be able to kind of navigate around, because that transparency helps you understand better how you're going to be able to cater your services, but also whether or not this is going to be something that's feasible for you to get involved in.
And a lot of this, I think, might seem more obvious because naturally you need to know some of these details to be sure if the client can afford you and if they're worth your time, you know, to be able to pursue this lead. We don't want to waste anybody's time. We aim for the win-win always when we're meeting with anybody and on any project we do. And I think anyone who has been doing this for any length of time can appreciate sometimes you can't judge a book by its cover, or you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, is I guess really what I should say. Some clients with what sounds like a super fab dreamboat project actually don't turn out sometimes to be a great fit for a number of reasons. Or some clients who have a skimpy budget and a project that is small actually need more than they realize. And once that discussion in the discovery call gets rolling, you see you might have a diamond in the rough. So it's really important to ask yourself serious questions before you make assumptions about any new prospect, any new lead, especially if you want to grow. You know, what might not be ideal right this second could be great for you later, or a filler to keep your team busy for a few months out of the year. Because if you have a team, you know that you have to make that payroll every week, right? So sometimes you have to consider these things. And what we'd like to do is challenge you to ask yourself, are there types of projects that would allow you to grow your skills in some other way? Could that make a lead more attractive in that it could be a project with what I call additional currency? Okay, those of you who know me know that term I use all the time, additional currency. What is it, other currency besides what you can put into the bank? Because there is absolutely for sure other types of currency. You know, the client benefits, you get to flex your creative muscles by engaging a new challenge, you know, things like that, that makes this opportunity that may seem to not be as ideal, but it might make it an ideal one. For us, you know, I remember years ago, a good example is historical renovation. We had done a lot of that. We really wanted to do more of it. We wanted to work with some of these, 100-year-old homes that were really needing of a lot of plan parts of it too. We're not talking about the decor here. We're talking about really like designing it and fitting it into that style and making sure that the home is respecting its bones and all those sorts of things. So there's been times where we have taken on jobs that weren't full service. We still get paid well, don't get me wrong, but it's not like a full service job. It's not something that is going to be maybe, you know, they're planning on refurnishing every room and blah, 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 all that stuff. So that's something that would be an example of a different type of currency, because a couple of the projects that we took several years ago really helped elevate our skills in that area and gave us new problems to solve. So that means that we learned more, right? And that is what you have to do to stay relevant, is to continue to keep learning. So you want to increase your skills in this area, in a particular area, whatever it is. I mean, I'm just using the historical renovation as an example for us. And then one of these comes along and that becomes a higher priority to you because you want to elevate your skills or have, maybe it's somebody, and maybe it's a new neighborhood. I mean, that's one. Maybe it's a neighborhood that you really want to get in, because you know, if you do one house and one, you know, upscale neighborhood, then people are going to talk about you and they're going to, you know, refer you and that sort of thing. So that's another good example of it. And, or it could be maybe a stunner for your portfolio. Perhaps it's a very interesting, but small house or a smaller project, but wow, what a great, you know, opportunity for you. It's all of that type of thing. And I think in this process of identifying how a lead can be a fit for you, it's important to analyze where you want to go. Like, what are your plans for growth? What is it? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? And what kind of work do you want to do? And if you identify what kind of work you want to do, and not just like, I want projects that make me a lot of money, which is, you know, a good goal, let's face it, but it's not the only goal. It's not the only goal that you might have. You might want, especially if you want to grow and you want to learn and you want to be better at what you do and continue to get better and better projects, maybe get projects out of another area or something like that. So you have to prioritize those types of leads also that will help you get there.
Yeah, I think in response to all of this too, it's important to keep in mind that when you're having that initial discovery call, you know, no matter what the sort of lead intake has been to that point, whatever the information is on the web form that they've submitted or whatever, you have to be really kind of engaged and open to dig in on the conversation, because some of this information might not come across really quickly or easily for the client, but it can mm-hmm. be really valuable to you and maybe turn on kind of your lights to be like, oh, well, this could be interesting. There's one in mind that we just recently got a call about, and it's a commercial job actually that was particularly relevant for Cheryl because it's a property that, you know, she has a familiarity with and has a history with. So it's nice sometimes to have that type of sort of change up to your routine, you know, a different type of client with different type of needs. It mixes up your sort of approach when it comes to how you're going to handle the creative process. Those are all things that can have a certain, you know, value to how you address them in terms of adding them to your project list.
Yeah. And I'm that's really good. And I think I know which lead you're talking about. Sometimes I feel like, cause we're trying not to give away too much information, you know, on a podcast, you know, because it's not good to do that, you know, and for some obvious reasons, but sometimes I feel like I'm playing the guessing game. Liz is talking about something, but I know which one you're talking about now. But yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. But I think this is important to emphasize. I really want to make sure that people are really locking on what I'm saying right now about this additional currency, about the growth, about your plans, about planning for growth and planning for the future of what you want to do. Because everybody has particular types of styles and jobs and things like that that they want to work on. It's not going to be all just full service, you know, all day long, new construction, 8,000 square foot homes and all that. If you're lucky to get all that all the time, then God bless you. I mean, I think that's great, but it's not always going to be that way. And I think people need to think ahead a little bit more and think about additional currency. Okay. So then there's sometimes the leads that just pay the bills, right? Okay, just pay the bills. The aesthetic may not be ideal, but you know there's a healthy budget to work with and you feel like you can do a good job with the project. It can still be a win-win, but it just doesn't really enthuse you in some way or another. We've definitely had projects like this come along sometimes. And they, you know, and do you take this or not? And I say yes and maybe no to that, depending on your current project load and again, managing your capacity and your need for the dollar bills in the bank, you know, how much, you know, where you are right now and all that. And again, you have to project out. I'm assuming that you're, you know, in the Cheryl train here of projecting out your income and your profit and all that. And so you kind of know where you are and where you want to be for the next 6 months to a year. But we weigh all these factors, you know, into it. And I'm telling you, when you have a team, sometimes there are things you have to do to keep the lights on, okay? That is the harsh reality of having overhead, okay? And we have a mortgage to pay. We have three buildings here. We have a retail shop. We have, you know, employees. We have, you know, all the things, right? And so that is something that has to be factored into it sometimes, right? And, but you still need to be prepared to give 100% on these jobs. I mean, perhaps you need to adjust your standards or aesthetics a little bit, but this type of job sometimes can be an easy in and out that just pays the bills for a bit. And it is more of a transactional type of service, perhaps, you know, or a transactional type of project, but it's still a good project.
Yeah, I think that we are always inclined to sort of keep in mind how these type of projects can sometimes just be really good too for our team to just sort of, you know, get a little hands-on knowledge or do a little training or whatever it happens to be. You know, we are very fortunate, I think, that we have a lot of different types of clients that get in touch with us because we're in an area that's very diverse in terms of needs. You know, we have a lot of second homes and a lot of rental properties, a lot of investors now who are doing that type of thing. So it's sometimes nice to get a little sort of outside of the box and to have those sort of quick hits. Yeah. I know I don't mind those at all because I like that, you know, quick roll through, you know, get everything sold, get the install done, and then move right on.
Yeah, yeah. And we can't possibly take on all full service projects either. I mean, even if we really wanted to, we really can't. I mean, these smaller one and dones, you know, are good to fill in there. And for us, we need a mix to make it work anyway, because, you know, there's projects on the way in and there's projects on the way out. There's projects that are in the middle. There's projects that have stalled out for some reason. I mean, there's all different things. And this is when, you know, managing your capacity is a big consideration. We talk a lot about this in the design paradigm. This is something that's really important to me because I don't think that a lot of firms go into it understanding how to manage their capacity. And that's basically your workload and your resources and making those, you know, mirror each other and work. And it's super important thing to consider. And especially if you have junior designers to keep busy, or sometimes it's just a season when you need to cut back on longer projects, because maybe you have a couple of big new builds coming out of the ground or something like that. And sometimes these smaller fill-in projects are just a way to create more rapid cash flow. And I think that you need to consider some of these projects as an opportunity for training with your team too. I mean, that's a whole nother currency right there. You know, honestly, if we've got somebody on our team and we're saying, okay, you know, this is a different type of project. Liz and I might be really well versed in this, but maybe Libby isn't, or maybe Gabrielle or Miranda isn't. I mean, you know, that is something that is a whole nother type of currency. So again, I just encourage everybody to think about it in that way and make sure that you're balancing all of these things. We also do a lot of plan review projects. I love these. I love these. And we can work with any client anywhere in the country, which is pretty fab, you know, opportunity. We've got several all over the country right now, and that's pretty cool. And this is a product that I primarily handle, can do anytime. So it helps balance my day work too. I love it. So it doesn't even feel like work. I mean, it is, but it just, you know, it's just something I really enjoy doing, but I also have a lot more control over it because it's really primarily me and the team is just facilitating it. And this is my sweet spot, you know, so that makes a difference, you know, so if you have something that's your sweet spot and you really like doing that, then try to figure out a way to put it together as a service that makes it a little more low impact on anybody else that you may have working with you, or just maybe that it's something that is a highlight in your day that you really enjoy doing it. Like for styling, for example, you know, I'm pretty much am not the one who wants to go out and style everything. I like to come in like the princess and, you know, rearrange or move or look at something. I have a great eye for all that. I don't like the hard work that's involved. Let's just face the facts here, okay? Plus, I'm spoiled because Liz does such a great, great job with this. So, and Libby's really good at it too. So I, you know, it's just, I'm a little spoiled with it. But if you enjoy styling, then that might be something that's a sweet spot for you. And you might develop a service around this so you can take advantage of meeting some of these leads where they are and for what they actually need. And think about your team. Okay, think about your team. Do an inventory of where your team excels and try and develop products around that for smaller types of offerings that they could help engage in. For example, maybe it's holiday decorating. We've never done that because I would rather, you know, poke my eyes out with a sharp stick than do that. I don't barely even decorate my own house at the holidays. It's just not my thing. You know, I'm a designer of plans and bigger visions and things like that is what I like to do. But I so appreciate and value somebody who's really good at that. And maybe somebody in your team is really good at that. And you want to put that together as a service that you have around the holidays or any kind of types of products like that. I mean, where you're doing something that is sort of a one and done, but it might be seasonal or something, you know, it might be paint consults or window treatment consultations is a very, very good thing to be able to do because people need help with that. But as long as you define the scope and parameters to make it clear to someone what they're getting, you know, and of course you don't bastardize your full service approach. You don't ever want to cannibalize that. You can absolutely make these types of service offerings work.
And they really do, I think, sometimes lead to other things. You know, we have so many people who over the years, you know, Cheryl's worked with on this or that, and they come back, they show back up. You know, we're fortunate, obviously, that we have the retail space too. But a lot of times when you make that connection, even in a smaller project, it can lead to more down the road. So if it seems like there's a way that you can kind of service that customer, there could be a really good potential for other things if it all goes well and you set it up right. Yep. So again, keeping that structure clean and the deliverables very clear, you can make it very lucrative for you and very beneficial to the people who are working with.
Yeah. So again, it's all about meeting someone where they are and taking advantage of the leads, if you're like us and you're getting a lot of leads and that kind of thing, and being able to do that. And here's the deal. Okay, so your discovery call is going to set the stage for all of this to be determined and to be able to figure out if you ask the right questions. You will be able to get a handle on which category they may fall into or how you can potentially service their needs or identify whether or not a consultation meeting is the best first step or to really get a better idea of what they may have ahead, you know, all those sorts of things. Their engagement and your discussion on the phone will help you read for cues that note their relief, enthusiasm, questioning nature, uncertainty, whatever. This discovery call, though, is really that critical tool. So to take those 20 to 30 minutes, you can say 15, but I've just never seen anybody, and Liz, you sure as heck aren't
talking in 15. On average, I'm usually at 20. 20 minutes.
Okay. Is usually all right. Well, I don't know about that, but I can start time. Well, actually you do time that through ClickUp, don't you? So maybe you are, yeah. Maybe you are right about that. Whenever you are in the office, I could always hear you talking and talking and talking. And, you know, and the thing about it is, it's not that what Liz is doing is trying to help. You know, it may not, she might have already identified that it's not a great lead, but she's trying to help. And I think that that's great. I think we can certainly afford to spend that time with somebody because you never know who they know. And if we leave them with a good impression of us and all of that, I think that that is certain, you know, is very important. But within that 20 to 30 minutes, you can use it to start to lay this groundwork for cultivating the relationship into a partnership that will align with your firm in one way or another if it's something that is a good fit for you.
Right. Because remember, they may not know. People may be calling you thinking
that's right.
They need one thing, thinking it's going to be one way, and they really have no clue what they're about to get into. And it's not a matter of wanting to scare them, of course, but being able to really give them some context for how you can help is a whole, you know, sort of target when it comes to appointing that time and really making the value noticeable for them, because that endears them to you. Those are the type of things that make them want to book the consult and get you in on the project, no matter what they have to do.
Yeah, right. And you know, I guess this would be the right time to say, you can't keep all the stray cats, which is what Liz says to me when I maybe try to pick up the phone. I don't know what we're going to do when you're on maternity leave, Liz. I mean, like, who's going to handle that?
I was thinking, you guys can just have the phone. I feel like it could just be patched through, couldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hello. Hello. Push. Yeah. Okay. That's going to be really good. That's going to be great, Liz. You know, excuse me while I have a contraction. I'm going to be talking to you about your home and, but you know, I need to have a contraction. Yeah. I'm gonna just put it out there that I don't think that that is going to work. So perhaps
we're gonna get Libby
because
trained
you're
up.
Looking like you're getting as big of a house. I think you need to be thinking yeah. about this, like what we're going to do about that. Okay, all right. So we segue here. All right, but we do like to promote an open mind and non-judgmental approach when you are first speaking with a new lead. I mean, you have to be savvy, right? You really do. I mean, consider what you're getting yourself into if you engage with this client and whether it truly will be a good fit for your firm at the moment. Either do the nature the scope or the timeline to get accomplished or any of these other things that I'm talking about. So I am trying to throw out things that are maybe you haven't thought about or that are a little different or that that people don't talk about all the time, that there's are other types of leads. And there's also ways to develop products to service those leads and to make it happen that will fit into your managing your capacity. And trust me, Liz and I are managing our resources and our capacity every single day. And as a matter of fact, today I have a 1 o'clock, 1:30, and then a 4 o'clock and I'm leaving Sunday. And so, yeah. Okay. So we're managing right up to the bottom. Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to kill you if you put anything on Saturday, Liz. I really am. I don't care how good of a lead is or anything else. You know, sometimes, you know, once we speak with them about the consult fee and the process beyond that meeting, they catch the drift that we're a larger operation than they may need for their built-in, you know, conversion in their dining room or their doghouse or the, you know, they need someone to simply draw a pergola or something outside. I mean, those aren't going to be things that we're going to be able to morph into something more or different or whatever, though.
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
it's not going to happen.
Because it is important. I mean, again, that budget conversation and the intended investment that they have or are anticipating having in their project is going to clue us into certain things, either that their expectation needs to be recalibrated or that they're thinking they're going to get a lot more than they're going to be able to probably for that price point. We had a lead call in, this was months ago, but she had a cinder block home and $50,000 and she was going to revamp the whole thing. And the more that I spoke with her, the more that she realized that there really was a lot that she needed to address because she was bringing that thing down to bare bones. And she realized, she's like, I really can't do this at this time. You know, I need to kind of phase it out. And that's part of what that discussion is about. If you engage with people in the right way, you know, you might still be able to get a job out of it. They might get back in touch with you down the road or whatever it happens to be.
And people
but
do.
It's important
people
to really
all the
clarify
time.
That.
Yeah.
Right?
On our lead list, we have a hold. We have a hold column because we use ClickUp and we have a great lead system
right.
with this. And it just like flows right through. It's really awesome. And we have a hold column. So periodically, Liz or I will go through it. And I'll either ask questions like, really, do you think this is going to happen or not? But we put them there just because we think that maybe they're going to show back up. And people do.
You never know. Yeah. And I think, too, that sometimes when you start talking about how labor might add up, how, you know, they might say something that clues you into the fact that they're going to need an engineer or an architect. they may not have thought of those things yet. So not to, again, you know, scare the pants off them, but to remind them, you know, you have a lot that's going to go on with this project from the sounds of it. Have you really considered some of these other costs? You might want to call some of these people in, you know, get some numbers, get some preliminary bids, because it gives you the chance to give them a little education and then to kind of skirt out of it a bit and remind them that they maybe need to do some more research before they really consider who they're hiring for this project and how big the scope is going to be.
Right, right, right. And this, so your role in the process of engaging a client like this and being in business requires education. I mean, this is what Liz is saying, that you requires this education, and not just the potential for the project, because of course, in any space with any client, there will be 100 brilliant ideas they could consider, but more so in determining if they are a right fit for your firm or not, being transparent and really honest with them about their expectations. Because I would much rather us get all this out in the open at the beginning. I mean, we are not like Slick Willie here trying to just, you know, use a loss leader type of approach to get a lead in. It's not conducive to a win-win, but it's also just a waste of time for everyone. It just really is. And I don't feel like you need to coddle them. I really don't. I think that, you know, you're obviously going to not say, oh my God, and laugh, you know, scarily, you know, down the, you know, like, oh my God, $50,000, you know, I mean, you're not going to do that. I mean, of course not. I mean, that's not what I'm talking about, but I don't think you need to coddle people and be realistic with them about it, and not just dismiss if they say, oh, it's $250,000 and I want to, you know, put a new addition on. I would not get into that sort of conversation about it, because you really don't know yet how much it's going to be. But we all know that, you know, $50,000 is not going to get you very far in a kitchen remodel or something like that. So I think it's important to be professional, but clarify some of these details they may not be considering, you know, right off the bat. And you don't want to beat them down, make them feel dumb or any of that. I just want to, you know, reinforce that sort of an idea. You want them to see you as the expert and start building on that relationship in case this is something that goes down the, you know, goes to fruition and you actually are going to do that. And sometimes I think that the way that Liz has approached this and our philosophy on this, that sometimes that's really kind of a wake up call for them. I mean, don't you think? I mean, that's sort of like this wake up call for people, you know, and it may bring about a conversation where they start to ask more about what they would need to have set aside for a project of this nature. And I just don't think that we're doing the wrong thing by helping somebody with that without trying to make them understand kind of, you know, where this is going on, because it's just like I say when I went and bought a new car a few years ago. I had no idea how expensive cars were. I hadn't bought one in a long time. So I was just not educated on it. You know, that's just the whole idea. But I think once you have this kind of a conversation, then you'll begin to feel that sense of deeper awareness for what you can do for them, and the potential for their project may take a different turn. It has happened to us many, many times. That doesn't mean they're going to be a $200,000 remodel budget client all of a sudden if they started with $50,000. Okay. That's not what I'm talking about. But we have had, I mean, I would say this happens probably 50% of the time. Wouldn't you, Liz?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't you say? There may be a way for you to engage with them on schematics or you know, whatever, right, something like that, and then have them on the merry way from having this engaged conversation. But you know, I mean, it's happened with us many times. And I haven't done the stats on this, and you guys know I'm a metrics kind of person, but I would say that at least 50% of the time that the budget is morphing quite substantially based on the call. We just had one. We just signed up that was putting a second story on the house that is in East Hill, right? And I was like, oh my God, they're not, they doubled the budget. You know, it was like, I don't know, whatever it was, 300 to 600 or 250 to 500 or something like that. But it was, you know, it was after we went through this due diligence and they met with the engineer and really realized what was going on, you know?
Right. That was the exact example I was just thinking of, because it really was a matter of them being excited about this project, knowing that they wanted to do it. You know, they had a chunk of change to start with, but they really needed to be able to get more context for all of the bells and whistles that were going to go along with really just getting the project geared up. And once they had that information, they felt more comfortable. They were able to then say, you know what, we can do this. This is what we're going to do. And that's exactly how we targeted our scope for the contract with them.
Yeah. And I think here's the deal with that too. We went out there on the initial consult. It was right down the street from us. We went out there. They were delightful people. We really liked them. We wanted to work with them. But you know what? We did the right thing. We said, you know what? You need to get with our engineer or an engineer of your choice or whatever, because you really need, this is, I know a lot from doing this for 23 years. I can look in the attic as well as anybody. I can see things that I can say, hey, you know, this might be doable. This might not. I'm not an engineer, but here's my thoughts on it. But I also can look and say, ruh-roh, you know, we have a lot more to deal with here. You need to get the engineer in before you spend money with us so that we can make sure that you are going to be okay with where this budget direction is going, you know? So I think that's something that's really important. And I feel good about that. I asked Liz a couple times, do you think this is going to happen or not? Because a lot of times people realize, you know what? I can't do that. I'm going to have to scale down my remodel quite a bit or whatever. In their case, they embraced it and, you know, signed the contract a couple of weeks ago and, you know, away we go. But I think you're getting the idea here that you need to make the discovery call count and be open to what you are hearing so you can navigate the best steps for the conversation with a potential lead. Okay. And here's the thing. Okay. So now let's talk about if you get a bad feeling, what are the indicators you have a bad lead on the line? Remember, I don't believe in red flags. I don't want to call people red flags. I think that's labeling. I don't like it. I think it's a bad mindset, blah, you know, just, that's just the way I feel about it. Get that out of your head. Is everyone right for you? No. Are we right for everyone else? No. Same way. You know, I'm not right for every client either. But Liz, how do you handle it when you feel the direction is not going in the right way? Besides the obvious, the bad attitude and entitled nature and expectation you'll show up for free tomorrow morning and, you know, doing a dance and all that kind of thing. Although I will say that we are showing up today and the lead was 2 days ago and I'm getting ready to go out of the country. But hey, you know what? That's the assessment you make, right? And that's what right. You do. And Liz is really good about doing that. But anyway, what do you think is like, what are some of the ideas that might trigger a feeling it's not right for us?
Yeah, I think, you know, we are very keen, I think, to how valuable we know our services are. And we always try to sort of maintain this mentality that we don't want to bend to those who don't get it or don't understand it, because whether it's intentional or not, they may devalue what it is that the importance of what we can contribute is. And that can right. be really frustrating for us, because when someone doesn't understand or they're not really grasping it, we have to be able to either get ourselves out of that situation or recalibrate what it is that they're thinking. Some of the things that might indicate to us that we're maybe not pursuing a consult with this person or where I need to kind of skirt out of the situation, you know, would be if they're questioning or not understanding why we would charge for the consultation meeting or why we would have a consultation meeting at all. You know, if they have timeline expectations. This is a big one for me because mm-hmm. it stresses me to the core when people say, oh, I need it done in 2 weeks and blah, blah, blah. Like, let's just get it going. And I'm thinking, there's no way. This is not going to happen.
No, and we just recently, let me jump in here real quick. We just recently walked on a really good job because the timeline expectation was too much. And it was a really good job. And I kind of had a little moment. I had a moment and thought, oh, you know, but you know what? I mean, that's how in control of our resources and managing those resources and our capacity that I feel we have evolved into, because we knew that this was just, no matter how good it might have been and how delightful the people were and all of that, their timeline was not flexible at all. And it was not going to happen. And I did have a moment, like just a very brief moment of being kind of sad about that, because, you know, I like to win them all. And then we moved on. And then we had, you know, probably 10 other projects come in and several contracts signed since then. But anyway, go on with the list, Liz, because I think people need to hear this.
But yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, again, it was a great project. It was a sizable project, but it was week before Christmas, I think it was, and they wanted the plans back by Tuesday. And it was just like, there's no way we're going to be able to.
I don't think it was that.
Even if
it wasn't
Cheryl
that
worked,
short notice, but
worked
it was,
her fingers
but it was
to
very,
the bone.
It was very quick. Yeah, it was very quick.
But, you know, those type of things can impact whether or not it's feasible for you. You know, budget expectations are another thing too. And it can be hard. You know, we, just as we said, we don't want to discredit people who maybe don't have a good sense for how much it's really going to cost. But when they seem really, really strict on that, and we know that there's no way they're going to be able to hit their mark with what it is that they're mm-hmm. trying to spend, you know, we address that. We address it carefully, but it's important to be able to identify that for someone. Also, if we find out someone's working with a contractor who's kind of bad news bears for us, you know, those are things that are going to preclude us from wanting to get engaged in it, because it may require more effort mm-hmm. or really just the type of energy that we don't want to have to get into.
Yeah, not enough
so
money.
So those
in the
are the
world.
Type of things that might, you know, might say, this is not the right fit for us.
So yeah, exactly. And there's not enough money in the world to take on something that you really know in your heart of hearts is the team that's involved is not a good is not a good match for you. So if the lead seems good enough to book the consultation and you feel like you've done your due diligence to explain how your services work and all that, and you have had more opportunity to really hone in on what is involved to make the project go once you meet in person, you know, then I think that you'll persuade them to understand your point of view in terms of whether the scope they have outlined in your discussion will truly get them to where they need to go. Okay. So if you do all this, I think that if you're dealing with reasonable people, and I tell clients sometimes, you know what, you get bonus points for being reasonable with me. You know, I have actually said that in real life to somebody who I think has a sense of humor like I do. I will say, you know, you seem like a very reasonable person. I really would like to work with you because you're so reasonable, because we put a high priority on reasonable. But during the consult, you'll have the chance to do a deeper dive and really see the space and all of that. You'll be able to interact with a client, potentially their partner, family, whatever. You'll be able to read their facial expressions, their level of engagement, and sense their excitement too, you know, with the overall discussion you're having, with the words you're saying. When I throw out a few little like salvos, you know, I gauge the reaction. I'm looking for a reaction to see how people respond to certain stimulus when I am saying something. This is a really important process for us. You know, it really is. And we look at the consult meeting as a chance to cover a lot of ground. We're going to give the client a chance to walk us through what they see as the needs in the space. We're going to share our thoughts with more of a global sort of conversation to educate on thoughts that resonate from where what they've shared. And then, of course, what we see. You know, we're not designing at the time. We don't do that. But we're addressing scope needs and attention to particular areas of interest and some areas perhaps that they haven't identified. You know, and we want to identify their priorities for sure. We're not trying to run the bill up or anything like that. But sometimes people don't realize the domino effect, I think, of working on this space and then how it affects another space and all that. So I think it's really important in the initial consult to talk about that. And, you know, and we're going to also try to figure out why these spaces are important to them, because sometimes it doesn't make any sense. They're like leaving a space, perhaps they're not talking about a space, perhaps that is that where they live every single day. But they want to redo this corner in the corner of the dining room, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's just sometimes, I mean, I'm joking, but you know what I mean? Sometimes people are just like, it's like, you want to spend all this money on that, but yet you don't want to address this over here. And sort of, it's a disconnect, but it also gives us a chance to gain a broader perspective for how we can develop a scope of work to cater to the client's needs. That's how it works for us. That discovery call and the initial consult are so important because we do flat fees and because we're going to do a scope of work for these people and give them options as to how to engage us.
Right. And those are the points that we address with people when we're on the discovery call. So they understand this is the context for what you need to know about what the consult is going to be about. It gives them a very clear sense of what the agenda is. And I say to them, you know, we're going to take what you say into consideration, of course. And, you know, we want you to kind of guide us through what your priorities are. But the idea here is too, for us to be able to sort of speak to the space, and we might say something or ask a question where your eyes bug out of your head. And that tells us that, you know, okay, that's not something that they want to address in this scope. But The whole idea is for us to be able to really absorb it and figure out what next steps should be.
Right. And it gets them excited on how we'll collaborate. And that's the important thing. I think getting people excited is my number one job at the initial consultation. I really do. And I think getting people excited on the discovery call is Liz's number one job. I really do. Along with getting all the information and all the things that we've talked about. But that is something really important. And then, of course, we're going to hone in on those scope options, you know, much more succinctly, you know, after we've done all this process. So and then we're going to know, we're going to have more clarity, just exactly how we can address the project and how to present that information to the client in a way that will address their pain points, get the job done, impress to them why we are the best for the job, because that's how we do it. That's how our scope is written. It's not like written in a contract form or anything like that. It is written in such a way that addresses all of this. And why other people don't do this is just beyond my comprehension. But again, that's a whole nother ball of wax and part of what we teach in the design paradigm. But if we can't tell at that point if it's actually a good lead for us or not, we probably haven't done our job properly, of course. If in fact we're at the end of the initial consult after the discovery call and we go out and it's a paid consult and all that, then we have something is wrong with us. Something is wrong with our process. If we can't decide, if we're scratching our head going, do we really want this job or not after that initial consult? I mean, it's not a good thing. Right. But even, you know, we can target their needs with more clarity and decide how we want to control the narrative with the scope if we are even offering a modified service. I mean, there's just so many other ways I think that you can approach this and how the assessment of the investment might go if you are really doing a really good job on these first two initial interactions with the client, yeah, I guess is the best way to say that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's really our building block. And I think it helps us speak to, you know, what the company is about. And I think it gives clients a really good sense of the experience that they're going to have with us, because that sort of in-depth analysis and that attention and that sort of excitement about getting all the details sorted out is very much what weaves through all the rest of our process as we go along in the design, you mm-hmm. know, and execution phases.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, and here's, I'm going to give you like a little bonus nugget here before we get to the damn good truth in just a second. Okay. So here's a little bonus bit of wisdom. I don't care what anybody says about this. You need to charge for your initial consultations. If you're brand new, you can start out at $50 if you want. I mean, it doesn't matter. You can raise it every single time. It doesn't matter. It's a matter of, you know, charging for that, because otherwise you are going to be spending way too much time going out on appointments once you get busy and not being paid. Now, if you're brand new and you have nothing else to do, maybe you might consider something, you know, a modified type of approach. But here's the thing. If you're busy and you know, like most designers, and someone questions your fee to come to their home for the initial consult, this is a surefire way to stop them dead in their tracks. Okay, you ready? You know, tell them with the biggest smile you can muster. Big old smile. Well, of course we have a fee to meet with any client. If we did not, we would be doing look-see appointments all day, every day, and not have a single second to actually get work done. I mean, there is no comeback to that, y'all. Spin it how you want, but there is no comeback to that. If they try to come back to that, then they are not your client. It's just the truth. Would we get any work done? I mean, already we have 5 or 6 initial consults booked for the next, you know, 5 or 6 weeks, and I'm gone for a week. Yeah, don't you agree with that, Liz? And has anyone ever had a comeback to that? I don't know that we get that much pushback from that, quite frankly, but you know, there's no comeback to that, and we would never get any work done.
Yeah. Yeah. We would be in deep trouble.
Yeah, we really would. Okay, here is our damn good truth for today. I am a salesperson through and through, but I also know my audience and our ideal client. We want to be absolutely sure the client knows how we work with our minimum spend, our flat fees, and the fact that we are not solving world hunger at the initial meeting, because we're not, okay? It's not a design meeting. If people want a design meeting, just like a one and done kind of thing, that's a different type of service for us. We give them a lot to think about, and often they want to consult with a spouse, right? Okay, that makes sense. We make a closing statement, but it's low key. I am not selling life insurance here, and I want to come across as professional. I want to show gratitude that they called us. I want to be knowledgeable. I want to listen to their words to discern their true needs and pain points and illustrate our friendly nature. I want them to understand that we are casual, friendly people. Closing the sale for the consult is not my primary goal, not at all, which might be a little different than what some people expect when you're in a sales position. But this is a completely different type of sale when you are talking about a value sale, okay? Very different, very different. My primary goal is to be helpful to the client. That's the truth. Make sure they know they called the right place. That they called the right place, and truly no need to call anyone else, and then also to establish common ground. That's what we want to get through, even if the lead is not right for us, or even if it's not, if we're not right for them, we still want to leave them with a very good impression of our firm, okay? And that is really, really important. Okay, so thank you for spending time with us today. We hope to see you back next time. And yay for me, because I'm going out of town. Not so yay for Liz.
Very exciting. All right, you guys, take care. We'll see you soon. Bye, y'all.
Until next time, stay bold, stay inspired, and keep embracing your bag girl spirit. If you've enjoyed today's show, head over to join the community at damngooddesigner.com to continue the conversation and sign up for our newsletter.